Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast by Believe, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside my two co-hosts and Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media, and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 28, the Alperen Sengun episode. And tonight we've got a special guest in the house with us. And Bruce, why don't you go ahead and take over the introductory honors?
All right, Ross, thank you. You know, before Giannis Antetokounmpo, there was another Greek freak in the NBA family, and he's our guest tonight. Steve Bulpet has been covering the NBA since 1985. He was the Celtics beat writer for the Boston Herald for 35 years. He's seen it all, he knows where the bodies are buried, and he's actually lived to tell about it. His current gig is with Heavy.com, where he's the senior NBA writer. He also has an unopened box of Rick Pitino pasta from when the future St. John's coach was the Celtics coach and team president who nearly burned the franchise to the ground. Steve also told me the proper pronunciation of my favorite Greek delicacy, spanakopita. Welcome, Steve.
I'm glad I could help you in some regard.
Well, we appreciate you being with us tonight. And Ross is our point guard, so Ross is going to start running the offense here.
Absolutely. So thanks for joining us, Steve. Glad to have you join us on tonight's show. We'll go ahead and get started with our opening tip, and I'll let Bruce lead us off here.
All right, Ross. I'm a Syracuse alumni, class of, well, let's put it this way. I was an SU student before Jim Boeheim was the head coach. Like many Boston fans, I was jaded by the success of the team. It was practically a given that the Orange would make the NCAA tournament, but in recent years, March Madness referred more to Boeheim's mood than the field of 68 stupid play-in games. Anyway, so now I follow college hoop far less than in the past, and it's definitely reflected in my miserable bracket. I'm not even talking about the flameouts by Purdue, Arizona, and Kansas. Most people were wrong about those. I'm completely dead in the South region. I have one team left in the East, K-State. I have three of the four teams in the West, but I had Kansas winning that bracket and going all the way. And I'm okay in the Midwest with Texas winning the region. But after 4 days, I've mostly lost interest. There's really just two things left to enjoy. Number one, seeing my former ESPN colleague, Danielle Sargent Musselman, rooting for Arkansas. That makes me smile. I really enjoyed working with Danielle, and you love it when good things happen to good folks. I expect you'll see her frequently on Thursday when the Hogs play UConn. Number two is UConn. I live in the state, and while the Huskies were always a rival of Syracuse, all of my family and friends like them, and I do too. But if the UConn men got to lose to someone, at least I'll feel good for the Musselman family.
All right. Well, I can't report that my bracket's any better than yours, Bruce, but I'm really hoping that World B has some better news here for his opening tip.
I'll do the best I can here. The Chicago Bulls entered Monday night 4-1 in their last five games. They were coming off a huge 14-point win over the Miami Heat on Saturday. They are in 10th place in the Eastern Conference and seem to be, barring a major collapse here, secured of at least a spot in the play-in tournament. And it's just interesting to see this team that has really two solid, what you would describe as superstars in DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, showing how to do it down the stretch. On Friday night in the win over Minnesota, the DeRozan had 49, LaVine had 39. And it might be interesting for some people. We've talked about how great the Kings have been since the All-Star break. They're the most improved team since the All-Star break. But the team that has the most improvement in terms of net efficiency from the All-Star break to now is actually the Chicago Bulls. They have a top five defense. They're outscoring opponents by almost 9 points a game in these per 100 possessions in the second half of the season. And they have a really tough schedule coming up in the next 10 days, which began on Monday with a game at Philly, part of a back-to-back. They begin that, and then it ends with a three-game and four-day swing where they play the Lakers twice and the Clippers once. They play twice in L.A., take a day off to travel back, and then play the Lakers at home. So that'll be telling to see where they go as far as the postseason. But it's the Bulls have been a surprise in the second half of the season. It's been really impressive given their defense. And I'll be interested to see how they turn out in the next 10 days.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And, of course, they've got the Patrick Beverley effect in the second half post-trade deadline. So should be interesting to see Pat Bev go up against the Lakers here twice before the end of the season. Steve, how about your opening tip here tonight?
Well, I wasn't sure I was going to have to do one of these, but thank you, Bruce, for giving me the opportunity to call you a total idiot for calling out the first four games. Number one, it gives four other teams a chance to participate. Number two, most importantly, it's held in Dayton, Ohio at the University of Dayton Arena, a fine college. It turns out mainly fine graduates, I'll say. And excuse me, by the way, let's see. They sell the – first of all, here, the people that participate in that first four always come away raving about how they're treated – by the university, by the city. They really go all out for that. It is one of the handful of best college basketball markets in the country. University of Dayton belongs in the Big East. It's a sin that they're not in there already. And being a Catholic school, sin is very important to them. 13,500 seat arena, sold out entirely for the last 2 years. And you know, I think I'll say, be nice and say that Bruce's take on that was profoundly ill-informed.
Hey, Donnie May's not walking through that door, pal.
Pardon me?
Donnie May is not walking through that door. For those of you who don't know,
13,500 people are for That's every true. Dayton game, and they have 12,000 or so for these play-in games. And when the teams arrive at their hotel, they have, you know, welcoming committees and bands, and they're treated like royalty. I'll dare say, no, I can guarantee you that the teams that play in the first four get treated better there than the four teams that move on get treated when they show up at their official first round site afterwards. They're treated more like royalty there. And, you know, it's a great experience for eight more teams. Four of whom will be going home after that.
Okay. I don't mean to, first of all, I apologize for my Dayton lack of reverence. So I'm appalled. But here's what's screwed up about that whole thing to me. If it's the last four teams to make the field, right? How come some of them are competing for a number 11 seed? I don't get that at all. Somebody's got to explain that to me. Maybe World B can, he's the numbers guy, but shouldn't they all be competing for number 16 seeds if they're the last four in? Just wondering.
My only explanation would be who would be watching four teams battling out for 16 seeds. The only explanation I have is that you're trying to create as much interest in at least two of the games each night.
The reason is that I think it's a certain number of automatic qualifiers tournament and whatnot. So you're putting some teams in there that maybe you think are better than some teams that won their conference. But, you know, when you're talking about the fifth or sixth or seventh team from a conference, it's kind of hard to say you're definitely in. You should have to play your way in those situations.
Okay.
Ross. Well, I'll tell you this much, Steve. I appreciate your opening tip. And if you're going to continue to fact check Bruce throughout tonight's show, we might have to make you a regular on the 48 Minutes podcast. This is great. So keep it up. I'm encouraging it. But for my opening tip, I want to talk about Ja Morant. Ja Morant is out Monday night, despite the fact that he's now served his 8-game suspension. And he's out tonight due to what they're calling conditioning. So maybe this is just a PR term that the team plans on using for his absence. But if conditioning is the truth, please add this one to the long list of problems I have with Ja Morant this season. Haven't you let your team down enough this year? A Memphis team that's currently tied for second in the West with the Sacramento Kings. Now, I realize Ja can't use NBA facilities during his suspension. But seriously, what are you doing in your off time? You couldn't find a gym? You don't have a treadmill at your house? I was blown away when I saw it was conditioning here tonight. And I think Memphis Grizzlies fans should be just as frustrated as I am. But As for that, we'll get right into our first quarter here. And let's start off by talking about what could be a repeat of the 2022 NBA Finals, or lack thereof, because the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors are looking pretty bleak right now. Steve, I know that you covered the Boston Celtics for over three decades. Want to get your thoughts here on starting with Boston. What are your concerns with this team as they are kind of bumping down the road here to finish out the year?
Well, let me digress for one quick second. You mentioned Ja Morant. If you see my Twitter handle there, I would invite you to go look there. I just did a story. I think it posted yesterday about Ja Morant. People around the league talking about him, his situation, the suspension, and a really interesting take about the new world, what it's like with the lifestyle now because of technology. This is from a former player. Anyway, apologies for the digression. To get to your point, I think the Celtics, as constructed, are still capable of doing what they need to do. But it's one thing to be an elite team, but to be that, you really shouldn't be acting elitist because you still have to do the dirty work to be successful. And I think they kind of falter in that area, you know, giving up leads, going away from what serves them best, the motion game on offense, the passing and cutting, defensively not getting up into guys or playing as aggressive as they need to. You know, to be elite, you have to be willing to play hard, really hard, and do that consistently. And they haven't done that yet. And I think it's all these different reasons that are being trucked out now are, you know, they're specious. They're true in a certain sense, but they kind of missed the point about what's gone wrong with this team, you know, that's still right in the mix of it, but hasn't played great basketball for a bit of time now.
Steve, you know, you did a nice job there kind of describing the problem. They developed this habit of getting double-digit leads, and then they allowed teams to get back in the game, and they're losing some in the final minutes of the game, and you kind of went through all that. So how do they fix something like that? I mean, to me, it seems like an effort thing. Is it a coaching thing? I mean, what do they got to do to get back to, you know, being elite as opposed to playing like elitists?
I think they need to have their brains rewired. If you look back, I go back to 2018, conference finals, game seven in Boston. It was in their hands. They got Cleveland in the garden. And trust me, the Warriors were rooting hard for the Cavaliers to win that game and win that series. They did not want to see Boston in the finals. But the Celtics screw that up by playing hero ball at the end. Like, and it's not because guys are jerks. It's like they're saying, okay, look, I'll take responsibility. I'll go make a play. Well, that's nice, but you've just taken your team out of its offense. And you're screwing up floor balance about getting back on D and all those things that kind of roll into that. That happened in 2018. Same thing happened in 2019. Same thing happened in 2020. 2021 was a bunch of issues. And then last year, what happened? They were up on Golden State. Golden State turned up the defense on them, and guys were saying, I'll go make a play. And it's like, no, having Jason Tatum bringing a ball up against pressure is only going to make Jason Tatum tired in the fourth quarter, which it did. And you had guys forcing up shots. And, you know, I can tell you for a fact that the Warriors were concerned going into that series that Boston had maybe the deeper and better talent, you know, player for player individually. But I go back to what was from the offseason, Grant Williams' quote saying, we were the better team. We just didn't have as much discipline. Well, discipline's a large part about being better. So, you know, you've got to stay within your stuff. So the same things we're talking about now have been dogging this team for a while. And you can say, you know, those who say coaching, well, Brad Stevens couldn't get him to do it the right way. Ultimately, Ime Udoka couldn't. And right now, Joe Mazzulla is struggling with the same thing about getting these guys to do what they need to do to just realize that this is going to be better, not only for the team, but better for them individually too. Jason Tatum as a finisher would have to do a bunch less work. If you could give it up earlier, run off a couple of picks, and maybe find himself freer to be, excuse me, world B, to be, you know, just to be more open, to be able to be a finisher more, and to just have his life on the floor be easier. And I apologize for that rant. Did I set the record for the longest rant you've ever had on this podcast?
I don't think so.
No way.
It's a nice start, though. You're in the ballpark for the record, but you're not there yet. they're just, it's 5-6 in their last 11 games. They were not less than a month ago, they had the best record in the league, and now they're third in the East. It's, their offense, we talked about it during the season, their offense in terms of efficiency, the first couple of months of the year wasn't just the best in the league. It was miles better than anybody. They were on a record pace of like we haven't seen. And now over the last 11 games, they're in the bottom half of the league, 19th, I think, in efficiency. So I don't know if it's just coming back to earth or they're just struggling, which Celtics team is it? But, over the last of their last seven losses that they had, three actually came in overtime, and they were to, the Knicks, the Cavaliers, and the Bucks. So it's not as if they, they're not winning each game, which you want to win if you want to be the best, but they're not losing. You didn't think they were losing the bad teams, and then they go and lose to the Rockets last week, which is just inexcusable under any circumstances. I'm happy the Rockets are playing well. We talked about it last week, but the Celtics can't be losing those games at the end of the year. They just can't if you want to be, among the elite or whatever. And so they have opportunities down the stretch, but to me, their offense has got to get in gear if they really want to have a serious finish to the season and have a serious run in the postseason. Look at the Bucks are getting better offensively. The Sixers are absolutely getting better offensively. And the Celtics don't match up right there right now in a season where offense is king in this league.
And let's flip the script here to the Western Conference now, Steve. And curious about your thoughts on the Golden State Warriors. Of course, they had high hopes looking to defend the title this year. They've had some injury troubles, but I think the biggest problem has been their road record. I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts on the road record and why that might be? And you had mentioned the defense against the Celtics in the finals. Do you see them lacking that this year with a key guy like even Gary Payton Jr. not being on the floor?
They've always had a weird togetherness about them. And I wondered when I saw the report immediately in the preseason about Draymond Green and the punch, whether that was going to be something that just kind of was, a bad ingredient in their karma. And that may be reading too much into things. And I'm sorry. But it seems like last year they had a team motivation of like, this used to be ours. We want to get this back. And that thing like pushed them when, things were difficult. They pushed through it because, hey, there was something they were going after. And if you could have seen every team that wins on the floor right afterwards is happy as hell, no question. That team seemed even more happy than champions usually are, because it was something that they had and they lost. And they got it back. And that's a precious thing. Doesn't always work when you remarry someone you divorce. But, they got something back, and that was big. And now, do they have the same want to that they had before? I'm not saying they can't get it back. I'm not saying they can't make a long playoff run and get this thing again. They've got the players. But it can be hard to retrace steps over the course of a long regular season, particularly, in their case with injuries and guys in and out of the lineup. And I think some of their young guys haven't quite come along as they had hoped as well. I think that might factor into it. Having someone like an Iguodala to be able to contribute was huge for that team as an example, you know, beyond what he gave you on the floor, literally, the example he set and how he could be a factor. So I think there's a few things that are kind of working against him there. And I think part of it is human nature. You know, you did what you climbed the mountain again. And, you know, now is the inner subconscious desire to get back up there still the same?
You know, you mentioned the preseason punch, and that's something that we've discussed on this show a few times as far as wondering, did that have some sort of a lingering effect on the chemistry, the camaraderie of the team, whatever? Because really, this is a team that for almost a decade, there's been like no drama there. I mean, you know, it's really been kind of like the good ship lollipop. Everybody's happy. But the things are piling up. I mean, we know there's something very bad in his personal life going on with Andrew Wiggins. He hasn't played in the last 15 games. They've closed ranks around him and nobody's talking about it. No one, there's been all kinds of rumors, which I'm not going to repeat, but obviously he's a key guy on their team. He's missed the last 15 games. Draymond himself recently served a 1-game suspension after getting his 16th technical, missed the Atlanta game, another road loss. They rarely lose at home and they rarely win on the road. It's funny. They're currently on an 11-game road losing streak. They started the season with an 8-game road losing streak. This just seems unexplainable to me. Can anybody want to take that one and explain to me how this can be?
Well, I can tell you just – I mean, I can't. I nearly punched Bruce after he besmirched Dayton. So, you know, that would have screwed up the chemistry. But anyway, and I, you know, guys, grab that one. I gave you my take already.
It's for me, it's all about defense with them. It's an incredible contrast, home and road defense. It's just, it's an amazing thing to allow 120 points per 100 possessions on the road. They have one more road win than the Spurs and the Rockets. That's unbelievable for a team that had the second best defense on the road last year. I mean, it was an, you know, it's an incredible transformation to go from so good to hear. It's not just falling off. You know, we're not the same team we were last year. I mean, they've really fallen off. I mean, how do you lose a game where Steph Curry goes for 50? I don't remember that.
And who was missing from that team's defense for the most of the early part of the year? Who had been let go or moved on and was a big part of things last year?
Are you talking about? Missed a bunch of guys. They missed Otto Porter. They missed
No, guys. Yeah. Payton, right? I mean,
Gary Payton was up in
that. He was huge in the finals last year.
Yeah.
You know, getting into Jason Tatum and, you know, that not just what he did physically, but the attitude of I'm going to get into him and talking to his dad this summer. And he was saying, like, yeah, that, you know, they just said, we're going to get into you. We're going to F you up, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, anyway, they definitely are missing pieces. They're definitely missing key pieces on the defensive end, no question about it. And he was one of the big ones, absolutely. And they let him walk. And now they got him back, and they realized – and now he's, you know, hurt and everything. But, you know, this weekend, you know, they're 0-3 entering Monday. They were 0-3 on a 5-game road trip. Steph Curry goes for 50. It's not enough. They lose to Atlanta when they get 25 second-chance points, but they still can't stop on defense. And then they lost to Memphis when they get 28 free throws, and they still don't have the defense to hold up. So it's really about the defense when it comes to this team, home and road. It's a completely different thing. I mentioned it a few episodes ago. I don't see it from them. You know, I know they're capable of going on a run. I know they have the pieces. Maybe a series with Memphis would wake them up. But until I see some signs that they're ready to have something end the season on a positive note away from home, I'm not seeing it.
And I agree with you, Steve. I think obviously Gary Payton Jr. was a big loss to this team. Now, granted, he has been out most of the year with the Portland Trailblazers due to injury. Another guy I think they do miss as well, Damian Lee. He's fifth in the league right now in 3-point shooting percentage. He's another guy that was kind of just a hungry dog looking to play his way into the NBA, play his way on the floor for a championship caliber team. He's now in Phoenix, obviously just playing in spot opportunities, but has had a huge impact in some of the games that he's played heavier minutes in. And as we move into our second quarter here, I wanted to discuss Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns. Of course, Phoenix made the biggest trade in franchise history, getting Kevin Durant, well knowing one of the bigger risks involved with putting together this three-headed monster with Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker was going to be health. What's your thoughts on this Suns team as it is now with Kevin Durant on board potentially for the playoffs? And do you think they have enough time to put it all together if Kevin Durant's ready by round one to make a serious run for a title?
I wonder about their depth. But in a playoff series, you know, depth isn't quite as important because the schedule, you know, is a little more relaxed. But, you know, I look at them and you've got to wait and see if it's going to work over some time. And you'd like to see it working down the stretch in the regular season, but really it's going to just matter once they get to the first series. And the way I basically look at it is that they're good, you know, that they're good enough to make it a 2-minute game, and they're clearly good enough to win a 2-minute game if they get to that point. They've got enough that they, when it gets possession for possession, you know, I look at Kevin Durant as one of the handful of, you can give me the ball, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, and you're still not going to be able to stop it. He's one of those, maybe a handful of guys in NBA history that can do that because of his talent and his size and all those things. So, you know, I don't count them out. I don't count the Suns out until they're on the plane going to, you know, on different planes going to different resorts after the thing's over.
And DeAndre Ayton, do you have any thoughts on his max extension and how he kind of factors into the mix now with Kevin Durant now on board? Do you think he's a max player? I know there's a lot of questions. I'm here locally in Phoenix, a lot of questions surrounding DeAndre Ayton's impact or lack thereof as far as, you know, what his expectations are.
It's kind of hard. It's like, you know, like real estate, you know, what's real estate worth? It's what somebody can put on it, and it's what someone's willing to pay for it. So you could look at Ayton and say, well, you know, should he get this much money relative to this player or that player? The question is, what's someone else willing to give him? And if you don't have him, how are you able to make up for what you miss? I think he's in a great position right now because there are so many guys that you have to pay attention to there. So, like, if he's smart and if Monty gets to him and says, look, here's the play we're going to run for you. Whenever there's a missed shot, that's a play for you. You know, so he should be able to get to the boards pretty easily because guys on the opponent's defense should be helping out elsewhere. So, you know, if you're that size and you have that good fit, that good physical skills, that good a dexterity, then he should be, you know, I'm not sure if, you know, like, you know, he should be having a huge sponsorship deal, endorsement deal with Waste Management, which aren't they in that area? I know the Waste Management Phoenix Open, but I mean, dude, it's there for you. He should be making huge bank just off of an endorsement for them. Clean up everything, you know, it's yours. And, you know, at that size, he should be putting up numbers every night. And don't get bummed if the ball's not coming to you on a called play. It's like, just say thank you and belly up to the bar and have some more.
I like DeAndre Ayton. I think he's got a nice little offensive game at times. The thing that really bothers me about him is that he never blocks any shots. He averages fewer than a block shot a game. And for a guy like that, I mean, that would seem to me to be a reason to give this guy, you know, a max deal is because he's going to be a presence in the middle on defense. Now, you know, he does rebound. I'm not saying he doesn't. I just, when I look at a 7-foot guy, I want to see more than 0.7 block shots a game.
But how many shots does he alter? You know, I mean,
I don't know.
He may not block, and if their defense is good on ball, then maybe guys aren't getting to him. Maybe guys see him and say, "I think I'm going to go elsewhere now."
Yeah,
You know,
fair point.
You know, so I mean, it's one thing to look at the pure numbers, but you need to kind of look more at the overall what's the eye effect on this thing. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying that I think there's more that goes into it than just looking at a number and attaching a definitive value to it or lack of value to it.
Maybe he needs the Memphis statistician to become the Phoenix statistician so he can get Jaren Jackson Jr. block shot numbers. I don't know. Anyway.
You know, it was interesting about when Durant was going to come on board. When he first came on board, the real appeal about this offense was, well, now I got Kevin Durant. He's one of the great shooters all over the place. But from the mid-range, he's the best in the league this season. And you have one of the best perimeter shooters, you know, who can get his points in Devin Booker. And you have DeAndre Ayton, who's one of the best shooters in the restricted area and one of the best shooters in the paint, period. So you had really tough weapons offensively at all three, you know, areas of the court, if you will. And that's why it was, you know, along with just missing Kevin Durant, that you wanted to see just how exciting the Suns offense could be, how unstoppable. We started to see it for three games. I think there were 130 points per 100 possessions, something in three games with KD there. So you saw a glimpse of what you could get. And yeah, you really want the 4-5 matchup in the West is looking really interesting if it holds up to start the season when you have the Suns and the Clippers. Because you know where Kawhi Leonard's going for 6-7 games. It's going to be right wherever KD is.
But you look at the biggest enemy of offense is conscious thought. Not just defense, but conscious thought by the offensive players, being mechanical. So you do need time for guys to get instinctive playing with each other. You know, you've got to get things done fast. And the only way to do that is you can't be like, okay, I'm supposed to be here now, or I'm supposed to be there. No, it's got to just happen. It's got to be on the computer chip. And I think that does take some time, and it takes unselfishness. It takes giving up to the situation, giving yourself into the team situation. And that's something they still, I think it's hard to say it's going to happen right away. But as it gets more serious, you know, that's what I'd be looking for to have things come through for what you're talking about and realizing that the talent levels that are there in the individuals.
And by the way, to what you described in DeAndre Ayton, what you suggested they should tell him to do was exactly the way Tyson Chandler made a nice career out of playing in the NBA. Never ran a play for him. He could get 20 and 20 and never get one play run for him at his peak. So he was that's the kind of player DeAndre Ayton with more offensive skill, I think, than Tyson Chandler. But that's the kind of potential he could have if he gets follow the philosophy that, you know, you just mentioned, Steve, how they should do it. Why couldn't he be somebody like that?
I mean, waste management, get Oscar the Grouch, lives in a trash can. I mean, the commercials, you know, the ads are endless. I think Bruce, get on this.
I'm going to talk about some advertising later in the show, so I'm going to get on that.
And with that, we've gone ahead and reached our halftime buzzer. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back
Did you steal that opening music from 60 Minutes? I think there might be some copyright issues for you there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're kind of hoping they'll sue us because it'd be good publicity.
Got a good beat. You can dance to it. Yeah, I like it.
Anyhow, Steve, we just did some music association with you. And now for our third quarter, we're going to do some word association. So I'm going to throw a name out there as our word, and then we're going to let you fire on what comes to mind when I say this name. So first one we have for you tonight is Tom Thibodeau.
Had an interesting career. I've known Tom since he was an assistant coach at Salem State. He was on my summer league team in Swampscott, Massachusetts. It'll be an interesting year for the Knicks.
All right. Our second one is another Tom here, Tommy Heinsohn.
Wow. quick digression. There's a couch over there. It's actually the second couch, but the one that preceded it when I moved in here was one that his wife got for me, or she was a designer, so she got the couch I needed. And we had a housewarming party, and Tommy just sat there. A bunch of people were over, and Helen would bring him stuff. And anyway, for the rest of its natural life, that couch listed to starboard from Tommy just spending the afternoon there. Tommy Heinsohn, I guess this isn't just a simple word association thing, but I got to digress. Everybody hopes to be thought of as among the best at what they do, right? Whatever career you're into, you hope to be the best at it. Tommy Heinsohn is a truly extraordinary person. He was among the best as a player, basketball player, Hall of Fame career, college star at Holy Cross, etc. Rookie of the year. He was among the best coaches, okay? Goes on to have an Emmy-winning career as a broadcaster for CBS, and then locally was a legend here on the Celtic broadcast. But also, Tommy, if you look at his career as an insurance salesman, he won awards for that. Back then, players needed to have jobs in the summertime, okay, and actually year-round. But Tommy told me he had a setup where the player gets two tickets for every home game, right? He would buy two other season tickets. And when he was around in the summertime making appearances here or there, he'd meet somebody and say, hey, I'd like to sell you some insurance. He goes, but hey, look, why don't you just come to a game on me? Give me your name and a number, address, whatever, and I'll have my secretary set it up. And they'd give him, you know, their information. He would give it to his secretary, and his secretary would always tell them, hey, and make sure you're there early. At the end of the warmups, make sure you keep your eye on Tommy then. And at the end of every warmup, Tommy would turn and wave to the seats. He didn't know who was there, but he would wave to those two seats. And it's like, Tommy Heinsohn just waved to me. You know, honey, Tommy Heinsohn waved to us. Let's buy a ton of insurance for him. And he won awards because he was that good in his field. So, you know, I don't know about you guys. I'm sure you're all great at what you do. But, you know, I wish I was among the best at what I, you know. And it's this guy was amazing at all these different things. So, you know, and excuse me, I'm missing something huge here. As an artist, this guy's painting was incredible. I mean, he would do shows all over. One of the best days of my life, I owned a restaurant in Marblehead, figures. That was one of the dumbest things I ever did. But
next day, to doing the show tonight?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's rapidly moving up the charts, Bruce. But it's CYO basketball. Everybody in my town played CYO, and we won some stuff. And at our banquet, Tommy Heinsohn was the guest speaker. And our coach was a man named John Smilek, a truly extraordinary guy, as a human being, as a coach, all those things. Just a guy I wish everybody could have known. But anyway, it turned out in later years that he became an artist as well. And I was able to, while the restaurant was open during that few year period, which I rationalized as my bad first marriage. I was able to have an art show one weekend afternoon, and we did invitations for it. We called it Coaches on Canvas, and we showed Tommy Heinsohn's work along with Mr. Smilek's work, and, you know, easels the whole bit. And it was easily one of the best days of my life that I was able to do that. So that might be the longest answer you've ever gotten to what you were hoping was going to be something brief, and I apologize.
You know, when you mentioned that Tommy was Rookie of the Year in the NBA, and of course, I know you know this, he beat out a teammate that year for Rookie of the Year. A teammate, you might have heard of him, his name is Bill Russell. So Tommy Heinsohn was Rookie of the Year, and Bill Russell was a rookie the same year.
Well, the weird part of that was because Bill Russell didn't join the team until much later in the season, because he was at the Olympics in Melbourne.
Right.
So that's what probably got in the way of whether Bill Russell would have won it. But yeah, you know, good point.
All right. Well, thanks for that story. I mean, definitely probably our longest word association, but certainly worthy there. No, that was awesome. I would definitely appreciate the details into that one, because that's truly an incredible story on Tommy Heinsohn and his many careers. As we get into our fourth quarter here, another fun segment we like to do here, Steve, is an NBA card break. And so I've got a pack of 2022-2023 cards, and we're just going to go around you three here. There's 15 in this pack, so each person's going to get five. And when you get to your card, you got to tell us a little something about the player, and if you don't know the player, a little bit about the team. So it could be a favorite memory, strength or weakness to their game, something interesting about that guy. Wherever you want to take it is where we'll go. All right. So we'll open it up here, and we're going to start with World B on this one. And World B, you are starting up with Walker Kessler.
Oh, having a terrific rookie season. Wasn't expected to be much. Was he the guy that the draft pick they got in the trade with Rudy with Gobert?
Yep.
So yep. That worked out really well. He's right up there in blocks per. He hasn't played a whole lot of minutes. He's getting more minutes, but he's up there in blocks per 36 minutes when you want to compare everybody evenly there. He's going to make the all-rookie team. So he's having a really good since probably November or so. He's having a really good run for the Jazz at the center position as a rookie.
Do you think Danny Ainge hates him for screwing up his Victor Wembanyama plan?
We've been talking about the Jazz all season. They've cracked me up at how well they've done. They're starting to slow down a little bit now, but how well they had been doing and what it must be going through for Danny Ainge with those guys. That was his plan. You got to figure was his plan. And it's just these guys decided, well, we can play.
All right, Bruce, you ready?
I hope so.
You've got Tyrese Maxey.
Ooh, instant offense. Great hair. Comes off the bench like a young Vinnie Johnson. Just lights it up. Here's some breaking news about him. Philadelphia lost to the Bulls on Monday night in double overtime, 109-105. So he needed to just get one more bucket, but he didn't.
Good timing there, will be with your opening tip on the Bulls playing some better basketball there. All right, Steve, you're up. Donovan Mitchell.
My favorite thing about Donovan Mitchell is that he used to show up at 4th of July parties unannounced. And I asked him one time if he really did that. And he said, yeah, he would do that. And I told him every time I did it, they called 911. just not quite the same. I like watching him play because I think he's a really good player, but I just like the way he enjoys the game as well. And he's with a better all-around team this year in Cleveland, and I'm going to be interested to see what happens with them in the postseason. That's, you know, everyone's going to say, well, you got to watch the teams up top in Milwaukee and Philadelphia and Boston and Phoenix and Denver in the West and all that. I want to see Cleveland too, so I think it's going to be real fun to watch them and see what happens.
Absolutely. All right, World B, you're back up with another rookie here, Bennedict Mathurin.
Well, another all-rookie player. There was a time not too long ago where we were saying he was making a run at my man Banchero for Rookie of the Year. He's having some trouble shooting, not as bad as Banchero is. Banchero's really bottomed out this year as a shooter. But, yeah, he is having some shooting issues. But he's having a great rookie season. He's having, you know, for a guy there, he's part of a good future that's happening in Indiana. They're starting to kind of fall out of it here. I don't know what the result from Monday night was. They were losing in the fourth quarter to the Hornets of all teams. So I don't know how that turned out. But, yeah, he's part of their future, and I think he's another guy who's going to be part of the all-rookie team in the NBA.
All right. All rookies going to World B here tonight. Bruce? So. Chris Paul.
CP3, the point guard. John Stockton is his spirit animal because not only is he a great passer, but he's just as shifty and cagey and perhaps a bit on the shady or even dirty side in the mold of John Stockton. So two Hall of Fame guards, two of the all-time greatest point guards ever, two of the chippiest little dudes ever as well.
All right, Steve, you're getting a tough one here. So remember, if you don't know the player, tell us a little bit about the team. Usman Jang of the Oklahoma City Thunder, first round pick from this past year.
Can I have the stick of gum instead?
Glad I didn't get that one.
You got anything on OKC, or are you taking a pass here?
Look, OKC, I think they're doing a little bit better than Sam Presti thought they were going to do as well. Look, it's hard to rebuild, but the moves that he's made look to be pretty spot on. I mean, certainly better than Philadelphia's when they began their process a long time ago, it seems. So, yeah, I mean, you know, look, remember, everyone's talking about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Well, I still don't know how they fit that on one jersey. you know, he started off somewhere else. So it's like being able to find the right guy, getting him in the right opportunity is huge.
All right. World B, I think you got another rookie here. Maybe it's a second year man. Trey Mann, pun intended. Oklahoma City again.
He's a solid player. I honestly can't remember too much about him since he left. He left what?
Went to Florida. Florida.
Yeah. And yep. I'll jump on what Steve was talking about with the Thunder. Yeah, they probably are a little bit ahead of what Sam Presti was hoping for. They were playing great defense at the All-Star break, top 10 defense, and they got a little lax the first few weeks after the break. Really bad out of the break. And it had followed a similar pattern in the previous 2 years where they started off strong defensively at the All-Star break, and then the second half of the season, they really fell off the map. But they've got it back together a little bit, and they're looking in pretty solid position to make at least a play-in tournament position. And I think that's progress for them. I know there's some people who are thinking, well, maybe it's another year. Maybe they should have just waited and try and get a draft pick. We talked about this all the time. The tanking thing, that's an organizational thing. When you throw the young guys out there, they're out to win. They're out to compete. So, I mean, I'm all for it, just like I was last week for the Rockets and the Spurs and the Pistons, and now tonight perhaps the Hornets. So I'm a fan of these guys that go out, these teams who are seemingly set up to fail, and they'd say, well, we're gonna play our butts off. We're gonna, you know, we're all young. We have pride too. We're gonna give it our all. And Oklahoma City's one of them with a star player in SGA and one on the way potentially in Chet Holmgren.
Yep. All right, Bruce, you're kind of on easy street thus far here tonight. Kristaps Porzingis.
You know, the Unicorns' former team, the New York Knickerbockers, played Minnesota on Thursday night and lost 140 to 134, but Julius Randle had 57 points. I don't think Kristaps Porzingis has ever had 57 points in a game, but he has had a nice year for the Wizards. And, you know, they're definitely, you know, maybe going to make the play-in team tournament, maybe not. But I think he's sort of, you know, maybe he's just a little bit of a late bloomer, but I think what he showed this year was that, you know, he's a baller, he's got game, and, you know, there's some hope with that team, actually, and he's one of the main reasons, you know, along with, you know, Kyle Kuzma and, you know, the veteran, you know, leader Bradley Beal. So, I would say this has been a successful season for KP.
By the way, right. Randle put up 57 tonight in a Knicks loss to Minnesota. Knicks were at home. Knicks went for 140 points.
Now, wait,
the Wolves went for 140. Apologize.
Isn't Tom Thibodeau a defensive genius and Minnesota gave up 140 points on his home court? I mean, I'm just going to let that one hang out there.
I think that game went 7 overtimes. Oh, wait a minute. No, it didn't.
I think the defensive label on Tom for this year is out the window. He's got a top 5 offense this year. That's I think that's where he's going. His bread is being buttered there with the offense.
He and Mike Brown, and, same deal, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of Mike Brown, Steve, you're on the clock here with De'Aaron Fox.
Good one. You know, I can give you a one-word answer, gamer. You know, beyond the physical skills and stuff like that, the guys who have that crazy need to compete are the ones that, you know, look, the ones that really succeed big time. Michael Jordan, fantastic physical skills, right? But there are other players we've seen over the years that could run fast, jump high, do all those things. It was Jordan's pathological need to win, you know, similar to a guy like Bird, similar to a Bill Russell and, you know, number of other players, but Jordan had to win. And I see a lot of the same competitiveness in a De'Aaron Fox. And I, you know, that's why that team, I think, you know, obviously they got good players around him, but having that guy as a trigger with that kind of attitude, I think is huge. I'm sure every night Mike Brown, you know, says his prayers, and among them is a thank you for De'Aaron Fox.
Fourth quarter Fox,
beam team. All right, World B, Jaden McDaniels of the Timberwolves that beat your Knicks tonight.
He had a good game tonight, and he former Hornet. So he was a good outside shooter, and they were drilling it tonight. And he's a solid player. I was surprised that he was let go by Charlotte. I thought he was part of their future.
That was his brother.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. Yep. You're right.
Yep.
So I'm less surprised. So, but he's a solid player. And I've had enough talk about the Timberwolves tonight.
All right. Bruce, CJ McCollum.
Oh, just the consummate professional. You know, left Portland after all those years and went to New Orleans, really has been the leader of their team. I mean, when they play well, usually he's one of the main reasons. He can still score 20 or more on a given night. He's one of the most intelligent heads-up guys there is. I believe he's like the players' union president now as well.
Yes,
is got a huge future in broadcasting after a career that could be a borderline Hall of Fame career. If he gets up to 20K points, he's not there yet. But this guy, you know, has just had an incredible career. And can I just throw in some breaking news real quick before I throw it back to you, Ross?
Absolutely.
The Golden State Warriors were on the road tonight in Houston. Final score, Houston 108, Golden State 121, breaking that 11-game road losing streak. So good for the Warriors. I think the push to the finals has begun.
Another banner for the Warriors to hang up.
Can I jump in with a quick CJ story?
Please.
Yes.
Just look up the box score. They played in Boston back in middle of January. And CJ, I saw him in the hallway after the game, and it's like, what a screwed up game you had. He was hitting these ridiculous shots, three-pointers contested, and he was like missing free throws. And I said, what the hell was wrong with you? He said, it was too close. The free throws were too close. He's one of those, look, that team is screwed up because, you know, missing Zion, and will that ever get better? But getting a guy like CJ onto that roster was important. Anyway.
And Steve, you're up here. I think we're going to have a Toronto Raptors memory or story or something come up here. We have Delano Banton. Not sure if you're even aware of that.
Make it up a little bit higher. I can't see the name. Okay. let's see. I mean, I don't know how.
I think said Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know how a team in Toronto even can compete in the NBA. They don't know how to spell defense up there. They spell it improperly, right? D-E-F-E-N-C-E. How can they even play defense? Yeah.
All right. World B. If
football, I would punt.
Clint Capella.
Part of a unusually productive lineup in Atlanta. People do not realize this, but the five-player lineup for the Hawks, their preferred starting five, which goes Collins, Capella, Trae Young, DeAndre Hunter, and Murray, is I think it's the Celtics group, the Sixers group, and then the Hawks in terms of Eastern Conference, the best net efficiency for any five-player lineup. You never would have guessed it's the Hawks the way they perform this year, up and down. I think they're at 25 straight games. They've been within a game of 500. That's an amazing thing. 25, yeah. But one way or the other, I think it's 25 in a row now. So the Hawks are the epitome of average. Clint Capella is, you know, he's on the back nine of his career. He's been a great defender. And like I say, he's still a guy that's needed in the middle for them, though.
Yep. All right, Bruce. Isaac Okoro, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Has steadily improved all season long. Has really, you know, been part of a great young core for that team. That's a team that if, you know, when I've talked about why I wouldn't mind Boston finishing second behind Milwaukee in the East, one of the reasons is because Cleveland and New York are like kryptonite for Boston this year. Boston can't do anything with either team. And Okoro is one of those young athletic wings. He's played great. He goes in with, you know, Allen and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and Darius Garland. That's a team really to watch moving forward. And Okoro is definitely one of the, you know, up and coming guys on that team.
And speaking of your kryptonites, we're going to finish it off with Steve talking about Emmanuel Quickly.
Wow. I think I wrote this earlier, maybe a month ago or so. He's a guy, you mentioned Tyrese Maxey before. People have told me that Quickly looks at what Maxey's able to do and says, I want the opportunity to do that, to be that guy. And I'm not sure he sees that in New York. So that's going to be one of those issues between a player and a team that comes to a head at a certain point. Because he may look at that situation in New York and say, I'm never going to be able to achieve what I'm capable of doing here.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Thanks, Steve, for being part of our card break on tonight's show. And with that, we'll wrap things up with our final thoughts. And we'll start with you.
Well, before I get into my final thought, I think next time we do the card thing, you need to shuffle them. I led the league. I had more rookies that are going to be on the old rookie team on my little card. That aside, one of the topics going on these days in the NBA is the Dillon Brooks and Warriors beef feud, whatever you want to call it, specifically between Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. You know, after their game the other night, Dillon Brooks said, you know, it's all friendly trash talk, but I just hold a lot of real estate over there in San Francisco. And Klay Thompson, if anybody was watching the video, kept pointing at Dillon Brooks and counting to four, which means the number of rings he has. And he mentioned after the game that when he retires, I don't think anybody will know about Dillon Brooks again or something to that effect. And it's all silly stuff. At the end of the day, it's all this stuff is really silly on both parts. But there is something to the fact that while I tend to side with Klay in the battle between the two and taking sides because Klay has the rings and Dillon doesn't, Dillon Brooks has done a really good job this year on Steph Curry when he's guarded him. They played three times that Curry's been on the court. And Curry, when he's defended by Brooks, is just 1-for-8 on three-pointers and 7-for-21 from the field. So Klay Thompson can point up his four fingers all he wants and talk about nobody cares about Dillon Brooks. But Dillon's in somebody's head because he's got to be in Steph's head because he's doing the job defensively. And if there is a matchup I want to see in the first round, I don't know how it's going to – it still can work out. But Memphis, Golden State, 3-6 would really pique my interest, to say the least.
Bruce, final thought?
I think the Warriors fans should print up T-shirts that's with his face on it and Dillon the villain. Anyway, half again too clever.
Marketing in genius.
Genius, right? In my opening comment, I pissed off our guest, Steve Bulpet, by talking about how this year's NCAA tournament has been disappointing to me. But I left one thing out. The commercials, they've been really good. Seeing all the players and ads and promos has really connected the present to the past, which I think is important for college basketball because players leave after playing for like 5 minutes and they're gone and you don't really have a lot of connection with guys. But when you see Adam Morrison in his Gonzaga uniform and et cetera, that's been really cool and I've really liked it. But the AT&T and of course, the AT&T spots with Lily are nonstop. And while some of them fall flat, most of them are fun. My favorite is the one with Steven Adams. He's on the beach streaming the tournament on his phone while holding up two dudes, okay? And then Lily of AT&T joins the fun, and she hops up there too, and now he's carrying three humans and not even sweating it. We know Steven Adams is the strongest man in the NBA, and the commercial is dope. He also appears to be separated at birth from Aquaman star Jason Momoa, but I digress. When Adams was injured on January 22nd, the Grizz were 31-15, but they're just 12-12 without him. I'm sure most Grizzlies fans are happy about his commercial, but they'll be even happier when he stops carrying Lily and returns to carrying the rebounding load for the Grizz.
Well said there, Bruce. And Steve, do you have a final thought on tonight's show?
Well, I'll give you a couple just quick stories. Number one, you mentioned the NCAA again. Philly Dickinson won the play-in game in Dayton. They moved down I-70 to Columbus for their next game. But they didn't have a band with them. Actually, Philly Dickinson doesn't have a band. So they asked the University of Dayton Pep Band if it would come along and do that for them. They agreed. The UD band agreed. And the day of the game, they had to learn the FDU fight song. So they play it that night. The Philly Dickinson players had never heard their fight song before. So the FDU Knights, the Dayton band people bought plastic swords or blow up swords from Party City or whatever because of the Knights and were holding those up and playing. So that was a really cool thing that gets to happen in these, you know, where fans from another team are in the same arena and get to adopt a team. One other quick story I'll sneak in, something you'll never hear anywhere else. Bruce mentioned John Stockton before. In the old garden, years and years ago, before a game, John Stockton had a couple of people come in the locker room, and it was a different scene back then, but this guy and his very young son came in. And obviously John knew the father and they were talking. And so they were talking for a couple of minutes. And Stockton says to the little kid, you know, you want to say hi to Mr. Malone? Say hi to Mr. Malone. So this little kid with just this angelic voice turns and says, hi, Mr. Malone. And the mailman looks at him and says, hey, I'm a little man, what it is? And the kid has this quizzical look on his face. And Stockton said, that means hello.
Pardon me, stewardess. Never mind.
Anyway.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good there. As for my final thought, we've got some bragging rights on the line here on the 48 Minutes podcast as we have a fun Tuesday night matchup as the Celtics visit the Kings in Sacramento. Not only will I happily rub a Kings win in Bruce's face on Friday's podcast, should it happen, but it's going to be a very entertaining matchup between the league's two top offensive teams, with the Kings leading the league, averaging 121 points per game, and the Celtics right behind them, averaging 118 points per game. While Sacramento is hosting, they will be playing on the second night of a back-to-back, as they're currently facing the Jazz at this time of taping on the road in Salt Lake City. But we've seen this Kings team excel on the second night of a back-to-back before. You might remember that historic game against the Los Angeles Clippers in LA a few weeks ago. So should be a lot of fun. And Bruce, I'm not sure who you have winning this matchup, but I think I'll actually take the under for total score in this one, just because I think the numbers are going to be inflated. So mixing in my best bet here tonight with saying take the under in the Kings and Celtics game. I think it's going to be a little too high of a point total at the sports books. But with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Belief. We once again want to thank Steve Bulprit for joining our show here tonight. You can find Steve at Steve B Hoop on Twitter, as he referenced his Twitter earlier on his tweets. He is a good follow, so go ahead and give him a follow after you tune into tonight's show. And we want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with you on Friday. Take care, everybody.